Welcome to Lubetkin's Other Blog Podcast. This is episode 21 for Tuesday, June 20th, 2006. I'm Steve Lubetkin, host of these podcasts. I'm the managing partner of Lubetkin Communications. We're a strategic public relations counseling firm in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and the leading producer of business podcasts for corporate clients in New Jersey and eastern Pennsylvania. We've been counseling clients about their communication strategies since December 2004, when we left the corporate side of the PR desk after 25 years in corporate public relations. In these podcasts, we try to bring you relevant content about public relations, communications, and journalism. And sometimes that means we bring you interviews with people in these fields, and other times we're bringing you content from seminars, speeches, and other programs. Today we have a special presentation. It's a three-part series. It's part one of the three-part series of presentations that took place at the Create, Communicate, Connect Best Practices for Effective Marketing and Communications Conference. It was the spring conference of the New Jersey Communications, Advertising, and Marketing Association. These programs were recorded on June 1st, 2006, at the legendary Princeton campus of the Sarnoff Research Center. That is the birthplace of so much of the radio and television technology that we take for granted today. Now, the New Jersey Communications, Advertising, and Marketing Association, also known as NJCAMA, is a nonprofit organization founded in 1986 with a mission of supporting a community of creative and business professionals with programs and resources to improve their effectiveness and the integrity of communications delivered through advertising, marketing programs, public relations, and other tactical efforts. If you'd like more information on NJCAMA, you can visit their website at njcama.org. At the conference on June 1st, there were three keynote presentations, and for the purposes of this podcast, we've broken that program into three separate podcasts. In this first program, we'll hear from Michael McDonald. Mike is the president of global accounts and marketing operations for Xerox Corporation. He's responsible for directing Xerox's largest global accounts, improving Xerox's customer experience, and he also oversees the marketing, e-marketing, the Xerox.com website, advertising, marketing public relations, and marketing communications for Xerox Corporation. He joined Xerox in 1977, and he's held a number of positions. It's a laundry list as long as your arm of different positions in the sales and marketing units of the company. Introducing Mike McDonald and the other speakers is J.P. Teddy of Triangle Art in Princeton, and J.P. is the president of NJCAMA.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you all for coming. We appreciate you battling the traffic and battling the confusion of figuring out how to get into Sarnoff. I know everyone's probably, if you live in the area, you know Sarnoff. You've seen Sarnoff before. You've seen it from the highway. But getting here is quite a feat. So we appreciate you you fighting through that to get here and be with us today. We have an awesome program in store for you. We have three great speakers, and we'll try and keep the pace of the program moving. I know everyone's very busy, and we'll try and have you out of here as close to noon as possible, although we're starting 15 minutes late because I got some calls from some folks who were en route and who probably still are en route, who are sitting in some traffic. So we wanted to try and hold the program up a little bit for them. Special note of thanks before we start for Steve Lubetkin from Lubetkin & Company. Steve has graciously donated his podcasting services today. So this event is being recorded for podcasting, and the podcast link will be made available on the CAMA website. So if you really enjoy it, you can listen to it again and again and again. You can put it on your iPod and go running and listen to it. So I appreciate Steve. And if you have any questions, or if you'd like any information about podcasting and some of the things that Steve does with his company, Steve will be available after the presentations, and he has some information, and you can talk to him about that. This is the last major event of the year, the last major CAMA event of the year. So we really appreciate all of your support throughout the year at our luncheons, at our Astro Awards. It's been a really great year. The board has had a lot of fun together. And over the summer, we're going to be planning and working with each other. The board will be in planning some great events and good things for next year as well. So do stay posted. We're going to redesign the website over the summer, and it'll be ready to go for September. Thanks to the help of the ladies from the New Jersey Hospital Association, Kirsten Smith and Pam Villaruz, and who else?
Marina.
Marina's joining the board as our web chairperson, so we're very appreciative for that as well. So this is our last major event of the year. It's going to be a great event, and I'd like to bring Mike McDonald up now. Mike is the president of Global Accounts and Marketing Operations for the Xerox Corporation, and we're very, very fortunate to have Mike. Luckily, we got on the schedule way in advance. I think Mike and I first spoke about this maybe in the fall, and we were able to get on a schedule and jog the dates around. So we're very excited to have Mike here. Mike is kind of returning home. Originally from Philadelphia, Mike kind of started with the Xerox Corporation and grew up with the Xerox Corporation, working and selling in the Princeton territory. So this territory is not unfamiliar to Mike. He and I were talking earlier. He used to call on Sarnoff's. He's been in this building before. So we're very happy to have Mike, and we're very happy to welcome him home. And we look forward to the things he has to say, and thank him again for taking time out to be with us.
JP.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you very much. Thank you. First of all, thanks, and good morning. It's great to be here with so many communicating executives, advertising, and marketing people. It's great to be in New Jersey. I want to thank JP for inviting me. I had a great opportunity over my 29-year career with Xerox to actually sell to his grandfather way back in 1977 and 78. So I've actually known three generations, and it's great to have his dad and his family here. But they've always been customers of ours, but also friends. So it is a great thing to be here, and I'm glad to be here. And my alma mater is Rutgers University, which is right here. It's great to come back to New Jersey. And it's good to have my son here, who actually works in Princeton and who sells to the graphic arts and communications marketplace in this area. You have a strong lineup of speakers who are going to talk about best practices for marketing and communications. What I'm going to talk about are really big brand topics. So I want to give equal time to some of the little brand issues. But remember, most things you do have a big impact on your brand. In my role at Xerox, I look after the big brand items, which are things like corporate marketing, advertising, public relations, as well as the little brand elements, which is everyday customer experience that people deal with as they deal with Xerox. When you put it together, you get a view of the brand that your customers get, because your brand is only as good as how your customers perceive it and how they see it from their eyes. And today I want to touch on three key themes. I want to focus on the transformation power of a total customer experience, transforming the brand power, and really process power. And I'll really get pretty deep in most of these three areas. Let's see if this works. No, it did. Okay. So after heading up the North American direct sales organization, I ran North America from 2000 to 2004. Ann asked me to really head up marketing, but to also put more focus on improving the customer experience. Now, by the way, if you're a CEO of a company, she made the number one priority of the company focusing on the customer. Now, if you read a lot of things, a lot of CEOs will choose revenue. She could have picked revenue growth. Could have picked increasing profitability, but she didn't. She could have just said, let's improve the customer experience. Let's get it a little bit better. But when the CEO of a company of 55,000 employees says the customer experience is going to become the number one objective for every person, people start to move. And everyone gets aligned to that single objective. And we're a global corporation. So we have to really focus on the customer, not just in New Jersey, but we'll have companies like GE want to install equipment in Shanghai. Or we'll have Exxon want to install equipment in Russia. So we have to focus not only on improving the customer experience locally, But we have to make sure we focus on improving the customer experience across the globe. So we're not alone. Other companies are doing the same thing. Books are being written. Papers are being published. Today, you can get many teleconferences, webinars about these particular topics if you go on the web. But a lot of research done by marketing companies, we looked at the Marketing Leadership Council, and it showed that if you focused on the customer and really focused on the experience your customer had with your company, that your market cap could improve by 20x. Just look at retention rates. If you look at the way maintaining a customer, you take Xerox. For us to get a new customer, it costs us 7 times more than keeping the existing one. So you think about taking care of your clients, no matter what company you're in. Getting a new client is really, really expensive. Keeping existing clients, if you do it right, is the lowest cost thing you can do. And most people don't look at it that way. So there's a buzz being made about improving the customer experience, but there's a lot of money to be made by improving the customer experience. Let me talk to you about a little picture here I'm going to show you. I think this was an interesting picture. This is Disney. This is my favorite picture of Disney World. Disney, by the way, is a big customer of ours. And we invited one of their people to come share to 400 marketing executives at Xerox about how they focus on the customer. The Disney executive said, this is the most important person at the Disney park, one of their cast members. Because research shows that when you're at the park and you need to find out where the bathrooms are, or where this ride is, or where certain things are, you know who you ask? This particular person. They get asked more than other people at the park. They ask directions. They ask for where to eat. They ask when the parade starts. They ask if they've seen your kids, if you lost them. One of my kids is gone. Where are you going to find them? Now, if you look at this, Disney knows their customer. That individual person is trained that if you walk up to them and you say, where is Space Mountain? They will drop the shovel. They will talk to you directly and look in your eyes. They will explain to you where Space Mountain is. They'll make sure and they'll even walk you towards that particular ride and answer your question. Now, they also, by the way, have been briefed every morning before they go out to the park as to every event and what time they're occurring that day inside the park that they're working. Now, that's pretty good focus on customer satisfaction. And do you think this person is a highly paid employee? They really focus at every level of employee at Disney to focus on the total customer experience. They know their customers. They know what people need to be armed with the information to help the customers. They act on it. They put good people in the jobs. They train them well, and they make them focus on customer satisfaction. Starbucks is another example. It's not just about the coffee when you go into Starbucks. It's accessibility of Starbucks. I live in a high-rise in New York City. What's the first thing they just put in? A Starbucks. You go downstairs, you walk out the door, and right on the corner there's Starbucks. In New York City, I've seen Starbucks in the same corner in 2 different locations, in the same corner. So it's accessibility. It's the atmosphere. It's the cushy chairs that you go sit in when you go in there. The music. It's the wireless hotspots for the young people that go in and want to hook up immediately when they get there. That's why we gladly pay $3.75 for a double decaf cappuccino that costs pennies to make. So if you really look at the margins that a Starbucks gets when you walk in there, it's a tremendous leverage and a tremendous way to market their products. By the way, Harold Schultz, who's the chairman of Starbucks, was a Xerox sales rep when I started. So they really know, this guy really knows how to market. JetBlue Airways. If you look at most airlines that are out there, probably one of the best, and I don't know how many people here have flown JetBlue, but they're one of the few that are always on time. They always get you where you want to go. They have televisions at every seat for people to ride on. They fly to the fun spots and the sun spots throughout the world. They offer superior experience at no extra cost. The planes are newer. The flight attendants are friendly. They even have a spa in the terminal at JFK where you can get a neck massage or a manicure while you wait. And they're not a high-cost airline. In fact, the chairman of JetBlue used to be the number 2 executive at Southwest Airlines. who really was the airline that started low-cost service throughout North America. And this looks deceptively easy, but it's incredibly hard. It's incredibly hard to have a brand that becomes that efficient, that reliable, and consistent with the experience that you deal with. Yesterday I was flying on US Air from Rochester to New York City, and I was on a 410 flight. I had spent the day with Dow Chemical. Get to the airport, and US Air announces, this flight is going to be delayed for 30 minutes. Guy across me says, God damn it, if I was in JetBlue, this wouldn't happen. And it was very interesting. He was right across from me, and he was complaining immediately about the poor service of US Air and Delta. And by the way, the plane did take off on time. They came back and said they got a clearance in New York. But it was an interesting perception that people out there really look at the JetBlue brand, and they'd rather go all the way to JFK to be on time than fly into LaGuardia, which is closer to Manhattan. And that's the power of the brand. Now, let me talk about touch points. And, you know, what is a customer experience all about? A customer experience isn't just about advertising. At Xerox, we have 50 million customer touch points each year. 50 million touch points. So, and what's our objective? We want the brand to be consistently portrayed around the world. We want a voice on the phone that's knowledgeable and helpful if somebody calls in for service or support. We want a website that's easy to navigate for people to get through and look at. We want a value proposition when our salespeople go out to the customer that's strong. We want a proposal that's compelling. How many proposals have you seen given to you that are absolutely lousy? A proposal is a very big indication of how good a salesperson is. Is it thorough? Does it really address the concerns you gave them? And is it delivered? By the way, is your service reliable? Doesn't do any good to sell a product to anybody unless you can't service it. Service is a key aspect of anything you do. So is your service good? Whether it's in the advertising business, do you get stuff back to the customer in time? Whether it's the printing business, if you don't get jobs back fast and when customers want them, whether, you know, that whole service issue is a big deal. Is billing accurate? You know, one of the issues we had was billing issues as a company. We have a big problem. We outsourced to GE Capital because our administration, and we worked at it for years, and we found out we were pretty lousy at administration. That was not our strength. Now we have people that have used Lean Six Sigma that attack the process, and our billings and write-offs and all those things have gotten far better with people who are better at it. So one of the things you also have to look at is, what are you really good at? What are other people really good at? And maybe someone else can help you. The big issue, too, is the promise kept? Are your commitments met? And by the way, are the intentions honored? I'll give you an example. If you sell somebody a lemon or you give them something that doesn't work, you got to take it out and give them something that does work. You have to back up your word. You have to keep your commitments to the customers. But every interaction, every point of contact that any one of our employees has influences a positive impression of Xerox and our brand. So if we have a service guy that goes in and says something like, and we've had it happen, boy, that particular machine's a dog. Why do we have that out? And then six customers hear that. I mean, that's a lousy impression of the company because one person made one statement. So we have to make sure that our people are representing the company across the board in the most positive way that we can. Changing dynamics. As we grapple with these issues, we also face the reality that traditional business models we've all been brought up in are being turned upside down. That the whole premise of Brian Eisenberg's book, Waiting for Your Cat to Bark, I'm not going to go into it because Brian's going to talk about it, but there was a review in the Publishers Weekly that said, the web educates everyone on the pros and cons of every product and every service. Educated people don't react well. The traditional art form of manipulation that most marketeers employ. As a matter of fact, it makes them angry and defensive, like a cat backed into a corner. You know, we need to make sure that as we look at what's happening, that we keep the customer in mind as we move. By the way, interesting statistic came up. We did some research on Xerox. How many people do you think go on the web before they buy a multifunction copier, fax, printer, scanner? 65%. And by the way, big corporate users. So in the past, it was just, you know, you think the consumer might be doing it. Everybody is looking first on the web before they buy. So what I'd like to do is talk about a few areas that I think are very important. That if I was running your businesses, there are things that we did that I think can help anyone in terms of leveraging success. We developed a list at Xerox that are five strategies that we think are important. Listening to customers, investing in the business, aligning your people, delivering value, and serving your customers. First of all, listening. Really listen. Find out what your customers are facing, what their problems are, what their opportunities are. You can't delegate that. I spoke last week to 150 managers in Citigroup, their top people in investment banking. We were talking about customers. Everybody internally loves a meeting. If you're in a company, everybody loves getting together internally. And half the meetings I've ever attended are a waste of time. The most important things people can do is get out with their customers and spend time with them and really understand who you're selling to and what they're doing. They're way more important than all the internal meetings you have inside your company. And too many people aren't focused on that. At Xerox, everyone shares the responsibility with customers. People in legal, finance, HR. We have a focused executive program where we take the top 500 executives and assign them to large accounts. So example, if I'm a sales rep and I have Johnson & Johnson in New Jersey, I have a senior vice president who helps me with that particular customer on an ongoing basis all year. So our senior people are focused on those accounts. I have accounts like FedEx Kinko's, the largest Xerox customer. I have ADP in New Jersey up in Roseland, one of the largest Xerox customers. And I'm assigned to those customers. And by the way, I've had ADP for 10 years. I've had Kinko's for over 10 years. So, you know, those customers are people that I deal with on an ongoing basis, representing the company and helping us in efforts. So if there's a problem that comes from any of those customers, I get made aware of it. And it's important that you have that kind of focus. So you got to fix problems, make the most of the opportunities. The other thing we do, too, is the focus on customers. And we have an Officer of the Day program where our top 20 corporate officers in Stanford get one day of answering every problem that gets escalated to the top. Now, can you imagine Anne McKay, the CEO, she has her day, and she has problems that are escalated out of areas all around the country. She personally has to take responsibility and answer those issues with customers and get back to them with resolution. Gives you a hell of a lot of information as senior managers about what's going wrong in your business. What are the systemic things you need to fix? By the way, you find out when your 800 numbers don't work. When you put a direct mail piece out there and the number is the wrong number and somebody calls and some advertising company made a mistake on the direct mail piece and it got all screwed up and nobody responds. You wouldn't find those things out if you were way up at the top, if you didn't have programs where you actually listened to the customers and had them involved. As you might guess, a lot of these people aren't the happy customers. And the role of the person is to listen to the customer, respond, and make sure we take action to fix what's going on. Second thing is investing. Investing is a big deal. We're in a research facility here that was one of the main reasons RCA had such a great history in the past. But when people told us, we were back in 2000 with Xerox, many of you may be aware of it, but we had a lot of issues. We had to starve off bankruptcy. We had to reduce our debt. We had to focus our energies on really bringing back our financial health, which we did. But at the same time, our CEO invested 6% of all of our revenue in research and development. Well, 6% of $17 billion is a lot of money on research and development. So we developed a lot of products when things weren't going well. And one of the things you have to do in a business is you have to invest in your future. You can't just work on the short term. Last week in Philadelphia, or 2 weeks ago at a show in Philadelphia, we launched 6 new products. Last year, we launched 30 new products. 80% of our revenue is from products launched in the last 24 months. And if you don't keep a steady stream of technology coming, you will lose your competitive edge. And if you're in a business and you're not investing to compete effectively with other companies, you will lose. And I think that's really one of the key things. And our customers stood by us. And they stood by us because we did invest in the future of the company. Last year, we had 756 patents in our technologies, 700-some patents. Those patents are critical for the next 5 years. And our goal is to take those patents, the 800 to 1,000 patents a year in our technology areas, whether it be color technologies or digital technologies or software technologies. And that was the area we didn't cut. We cut a lot of other areas. When I ran North America, I took out $500 million of cost in 18 months. Took out 8,000 people, which was very difficult to resize our company. But we didn't cut the areas that were going to affect the future for the rest of the employees that were there. So that's a big deal. So whether you're an ad agency, a direct marketing company, or a company like Xerox, you must invest in your business. You have to invest in it. And you want to get new sources of competitive advantage. What is going to make you better than the next firm that's in your field? Those new sources of advantage are key to your success in those areas. The third area is alignment. Alignment, you know, at Xerox, 80% of our people interface with the customers every day. 80% of the people. It's personal. Change efforts that start at the, that don't start at the top can easily die. When you move towards higher value services like we're moving towards, it requires organizational change. It requires people to understand that you're not just selling hardware anymore, you're selling services, you're selling solutions. You can be comfortable selling copiers or advertising the old way. You can focus the way you used to do it. I mean, there are many people, give me an example, we advertise on television, we advertise in major magazines, we advertise in this. You know what I ask the people? I'm not an advertising expert. I'm asking my people is, what are you doing in blogging? How are we moving more advertising to the web? Are we redoing our website? I'm not an expert, but I push all the new things. I don't push the old stuff. They can have anybody in there. But you want to push new technologies. You want to push changes. And people come in to me. I had a meeting yesterday and somebody said, we're a sponsor of the World Business Forums where Clinton speaks and all these guys. I said, then we've done that for 2 years. Do you want to do something else next year? Or do we want to keep doing the same thing? What should we be doing? And I think you always have to push yourself to say, what changes are you driving in your organization? And by the way, are you going to be involved in where the technology is heading and what's going to happen? And you have to look at it and understand it. So we hold alignment workshops that we had where we got all of our managers, the top 350, in rooms and talked about where the company wanted to go, got everybody aligned to the same objectives, and made sure we were all focusing externally in the right way. And that's an important thing because you want to make sure you're aligned as an organization and that everybody's moving in the same direction. Third thing we wanted to do is deliver value. By the way, what's the differentiator today? A lot of people have great products and services. Today, the differentiation of products is not that great, except in the high ends of certain products. But you have to offer them solutions to their problems. John Seely Brown, a former chief scientist from Park, wrote a book on the topic called The Only Sustainable Edge. He has some good advice. One, focus on your areas of world-class capability and stop doing everything else. Focus on what you're really good at, the core things you're really good at. Also, team up with other companies that are also focusing on their areas of world-class capability. Work with other companies that are doing that. And three, push each other to get better faster. Move quick, respond fast. You know, big companies, the biggest problem is the bureaucracies of big companies. They can be unbelievably slow at times. You have to respond fast today. We had a bid that recently we worked on with Honeywell. We just were awarded a 4-year contract worldwide for all the office products in Honeywell. The legal contract was 250 pages long. Now think about buying office products, copy, fax, multifunction, scanning. And the legal agreement was 250 pages long. You know, I thought I was a lawyer. I told RC, I'm going to go back to law school to get ready to work these deals. But the real issue is the complexity today. People want, like, confidentiality. People want unlimited liability. They want protection. You know, the phone company gives away your information. They're liable to be sued. Well, they want whoever's managing that information to be able to give them guarantees that they'll take the lawsuit if it comes. So the complexity of business is much greater. In the high-tech industry, it's about delivering value. You have to deliver value to a customer. And they have to believe the value is sustainable. If they don't believe your value is sustainable, you're going to get commoditized very, very quickly. Serve. You got to provide service above and beyond the customer's expectation. I'll tell you an interesting statistic. In the car business, if a car company has 60% of their customers that are satisfied, they lose 50% of those customers. If the customers are very satisfied, they buy another car from General Motors or Lexus or whatever. But unless you're very, very satisfied, in the very satisfied range, you will not have a high retention rate. You will have average retention rates at satisfied. That's a big deal, because many of the surveys you get in the mail say, are you satisfied? And people check satisfied. That doesn't mean a darn thing. Unless you get them up in that, you know, high end, you're not going to have any performance that's good enough. And customers that are very satisfied are 6 times more likely to stay with you than somebody that's just satisfied. If you do a great job with one of your programs, or you sell a great solution, or you have a great marketing program, it's the very satisfied that's going to do it for you. So these are some of the top line strategies: listening, investing, aligning, delivering value, serve. But the strategies only go so far. I've always been someone who's focused on execution. Because you can have a great strategy. The biggest issue companies have today is the ability to execute the strategies that they put together. And one of the ways we're executing our customer experience strategy is by leveraging the power of the Xerox brand. Building on that topic, The Economist recently ran an article about monkeys. It turned out they have a lot to teach us about branding. The article described a study that shows monkeys have the same risk aversion as humans. The research proved that even if monkeys have the opportunity to get more total food from a new source, they prefer getting exactly the same amount of food from the same source every time, every day. So they're creatures of habit. They weren't the only ones that displayed this behavior. They did a study of graduate students. They displayed the same behavior. Graduate students like to go back to the same places and the same places they're comfortable. It's funny, too. My son's a student at NYU, and he loves to go to Tasty Delight, this discount ice cream place that is low-cal. You know, and he goes there all the time. Then we go back to Rochester. He goes up there for the summer. He goes to Abbott's, this other ice cream place that's exactly the opposite. It's high-cal. But he'll go to the same places consistently all the time. And it's very interesting behavior. But consistency counts. Consistency really counts in the way you deliver messages for all markets. And we believe passionately in the power of personalization. But in the end, your brand must stand for the same values that you're trying to get across in the way you do business. That's not easier. It's not easy to do that. Especially, by the way, in the Xerox world, we have 65% recognition in North America, which is very high. We're one of the highest brands in recognition. But take our brand and move it to Moscow. Take it and move it to New Delhi in India. In Moscow, it's still pretty high. And then you go to some European countries, it can be low. And getting that brand to be consistent around the world is really the challenge. We've been working hard to measure our consistency in our advertising, marketing, communication across the globe. We have sponsorships now around the globe. We do Notre Dame sports in North America. We do Ducati racing bikes in Europe. We do soccer teams in Moscow. So we do sponsorships and advertising around the globe. To that end, we have an integrated global ad campaign. If you look at our global ads, they're all focused on color. It's all consistent across television, print, radio, online, outdoor, and new forms of interactive media. Everything is consistent. We make sure that every group is working across those mediums to deliver the same consistent message every time. Now, to give an example, we don't spend a small amount of money. We spent $60 million in advertising in the first 6 months of this year. And, you know, that's a lot of money. We do it all over the world. But the consistency aspect's very important. When I took over, we used to have an advertising. We use Young and Rubicon. But Young and Rubicon would be doing it in North America, and some other agency do it in India. And you had no consistency. So I got rid of every other agency, and we use one agency around the world. So we use Young and Rubicon for advertising. We use Interbrand for branding. So we have two different companies. One works on the brand, one works on the advertising. But we want to have a unified look and feel and common core messages. But then we do allow for local adaptation. In Russia, there's a Xerox ad that shows a sales rep with a business card talking about his relationship with a customer on a billboard in Moscow. We don't do that in the United States. But what they're trying to do in Russia, because they use a lot of alternate distribution, is build a personal feeling between Xerox and the customer. And very, very different than what we would do in North America. But the unified look and feel is important. And our customers are front and center in our campaigns. If you look at a lot of our ads, it's Honeywell and Xerox. Going to an airport, it's Notre Dame and Xerox. And we talk about the solutions that we put in place with a customer. That's a big deal. I went into Honeywell the other day, and the chairman of Honeywell, Dave Cody, said to me, Mike, you going to run some more ads with us? He really likes the fact we're running Honeywell Xerox ads, you know, because it gives him some free exposure. Now, the problem was the thermostat that was in the ad, they didn't sell anymore. So they go back to our people and say, that one thermostat you're showing there, they don't even make anymore. So we have to put something current that they're selling. But you wouldn't catch that, but their company caught it. You know, so it's an interesting view of the world. But the customer experience and brand consistency is important. You also, at the same time, we're trying to enhance our reputation. Here's the consistency of ads. If you see the top is television, then you see all the color ads that we're running that are Juicy Xerox, Spaceships, Multi-Xerox. All of it's related to color technology. So we want to get people looking at something and seeing color and driving that. And then across the bottom is all interactive. So we look at TV, print, interactive, all to be consistent across the board. Let me go back. This is one that shows personalized marketing, where we do a, you know, this is your own, you know, program. Let's see if this thing will go back. I'll stop there. Okay, so we're trying to enhance our efforts on the advertising front. And I said earlier, the personalization. You take digital technology. If you go to Triangle, they use what's called an IGN 3 digital printing device. This device is focused on high-end printing technologies to personalize information for customized direct mail, personalized communications. You may have seen the piece that that was done before to promote the awards here. That's a way to demonstrate how you do that. Today's research shows that 66% of the customers want personalized materials. 66% of customers want personalized materials in direct mail rather than generic ones. 44% of ad agencies have worked on commercialized printing projects in the last 12 months. Digital production technologies are taking off at a much faster rate than at any given time in the history of the industry. And that's why you're seeing major, major changes. Aldo Papone is a longtime American Express guy, and Aldo is a consultant with Xerox. He talks about the brand. The brand's the sum of experience, ideas, and feelings that are hard to measure, hard to use, but impossible to ignore. That's an interesting thought. Experiences, ideas, and feelings. You have feelings about brands. You really do. And that's and that creates a lot of loyalty. We've taken that to heart. Part of that's the experiences story that read in the New York Times, the commercial you saw last night or a marketing piece you might see the next day. If you see information in the major papers, that has a big influence on what's going on. And when deliveries show up, you know, when something happens, that's a big deal on the experience for a customer. Every interaction, every point of contact is a brand impression. So one of the things I would suggest to all of you is you need to look at your process. And you need to look at how your touch points work within your company and say, do I have actions in place to improve the various points that touch the customer, that influence the brand? Do you have a single point of contact with customers? Many customers don't want six people from a company calling on them from different areas. Like, it's great when, you know, if I have a company call me and three people from the same company call me about three different topics. Now, you want one person to come in and talk to you, represent the company, and talk to you about what they want to talk about. Now, let me stop here and sort of put these messages together for you. At Xerox, as I mentioned, our number one objective is improving the customer experience. It's everybody's job. To do that, we really do focus on the five things I talked about: listening to the customer, investing in your business, aligning your people, delivering value, and serving to keep us all focused. It's a mix of these strategies with a laser focus that'll drive business results. I don't know anybody that can grow revenue if the customer is unhappy. It's a very, very tough thing to do. If you start with a customer and you work your way back, the rest of what you do in the organization will fall into place. And you really need to deliver the best customer experience you possibly can do. Whether you're on the client side, the agency side, or some other side, good things will follow. What I want to do is just say I wish you the best and your opportunities, and thank you for the time. And what I'd like to do is answer any questions you might have. Thank you. Who'd like to start? Anybody have anything? See, at Xerox means we pay people to ask questions. Yeah.
I'm John Mulderic from Triangle, and you said you were big on execution, and I'm just wondering if you could expand on that a little bit. A lot of great ideas kind of die on the drawing board because they can't be driven through an organization, and that don't happen at Triangle, of course, but I'm...
Let me give you an example.
Talk about a little
bit. Let me give you an example. Before I was president of North America, when I went to North America, one of the things I noticed was I had the largest sales force in our industry. I had 5,000 salespeople working for me, and I had 27,000 support people. And we couldn't measure at the center how many sales calls were being made per day in North America. People tracked it, but there was no systems to report it up. So I said to the person working for me who's running the field sales, I said, what good does it do if we have no system to measure what we're trying to do? So I signed a young, talented guy who's a senior vice president today on this project. And over 2 years, we put in a system that when sales reps today make calls, they enter everything into their computer system, where they've been, what they do. Everything now is totaled nationally to a national level. So we know how many calls have been made, what product lines, what services, where it's been, and a lot of data comes up. Now, the thing you have to be careful about is, you know, if a manager puts pressure on somebody, you could get a bunch of bullshit data, too, that people just fill out. So you have to have managers be involved in understanding where people have been. But today, we actually can measure everything that moves in the field in sales, which we didn't have that before. So that kind of precision to be able to measure every single activity that takes place across 5,000 individuals was a huge improvement for us, you know, to understand that. We could see if our sales activity and calls were up. We then correlate it with revenue going up. If activity was down, you could see whether revenue was dropping because you didn't have as much sales activity. But one of the things you have to do, and we're big into Lean Six Sigma processes at Xerox, I put Lean Six Sigma people on that to say, how do you measure and look at the correlations between sales force activity and results, and making sure that we had consistency of process. And you know, most people, by the way, and you have to be careful, you don't want to over-process people. One of the things I always did when I ran sales organizations was I'd have all my meetings on Mondays and Fridays and spend Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays out in the field with customers. And you have to have discipline to make sure when you put in processes, you're not just bogging people down with things that they've got to fill out or do, but they're processes that really add value. But it does give you information that you can track and do that. By the way, today with the web, the ability now for people to input information and to get information in is relatively easy. I mean, in fact, even for a sales rep, when I was a sales rep, I'd have to complete manually sales order tracking every day, and I'd have to submit it to my boss. When I was a manager, I had to go through all this manual stuff. Today, with it being computerized, you know, if you're a sales rep today, you can make your calls at the end of the day, go in and key in all your activities, and boom, that's it. It's a heck of a lot easier than it was many, many years ago. But that's what I mean about execution. You have to really have processes in place to enforce what you really want done and be able to measure it. Because if you can't measure it, it's like advertising campaigns. You know, you have the great question is, I have my head of advertising come in and we'll spend $30 million on a TV campaign. We'll develop three new ads and, you know how it would cost. It costs like $2 million to do an ad on television and to really run it and do all the production and all that. So then I'll say, well, what's been the impact? You know, and you ask, what's the impact? What's happened to our awareness? What's happened to our predisposition? What's happened to our consideration? What's happened to our win rates? And where are we? And, you know, sometimes in the creative field, you get that blank stare. Then they all make 6 calls to Young and Rubicon, and they send over 4 analysts to give you data and information. But that's what happens. So, you really need to, make sure that whatever you're spending, you have processes that really can give you as much information you can about the return. Because what our CEO asked me is, Mike, what is the return you're getting for the money you're spending? That's what they care about. That's what she cares about. What return are we getting? And, Ann Mulcahy is my boss, and she's an exceptional CEO. If you saw Time Magazine recently, she was picked as one of the top 100 people in the world, as the CEO of Xerox. And she's quite an individual. But Ann's one tough lady. You know, she wants a return. She wants to know what's happening. She wants to make sure that, what we're doing is creating value for the company. Yeah, Jay.
Xerox dealing with, the issues of the Xerox brand. You know, it's a very well-known brand and people know a lot about it, but, the issues of you guys not having people know the Xerox brand the way you want them to know it. Like, they know you as the copier company, right?
Yes.
How do you get them to, how are you grappling with the challenge of getting people to, people who recognize your brand currently, to transition their impression of your brand to kind of like what it is today and what it will be in the future as kind of like a technology and consulting and solutions company?
Yeah, that's a challenge, because one of the challenges we face is a little bit different. Xerox does not have cameras. If you look at some of our competitors, Canon's a camera company. Kodak was a camera company. Some of them are big into the consumer world. So by the way, when your brand is big in consumer stores, a lot of young people pick up your brand relatively quickly because they're buying a camera, or they're getting that experience from other products. So we have a challenge there. So one of the things we're doing, when you see all that color campaign, we're putting a lot of things out there about color technologies, new technologies, different ways to approach things, production technologies, services technology. So what we're trying to do is take the things that are more exciting that we're doing. And to give you an example, 25% of the revenues of Xerox today are color prints. So we're trying to drive a shift. I mean, give you an example. One of the biggest things that RCA did was drive the shift from black and white television to color. Imagine in 5 years if Xerox can move everybody from a black and white copier to a color copier and be the leader in that market. That really is our goal, to lead a shift to new technology and to move to color, where black and white will be obsolete just like it is today on television sets. So we've got to lead in that direction to where the new era is going to be. And by the way, also do the research and engineering to bring the cost down. Because today, you know as well as I do, you go out and get a color copy versus a black and white copy, there's a pretty big price difference. And we're eventually going to bring that thing down. And that'll be a key thing for us to shift the technology. But we have to do a lot of example, in the services area, we have a lot of direct marketing programs. And one thing we're working on that I think is pretty creative, we're doing one-to-one marketing campaigns to a single customer. So what we're working on now is to actually spend like $50,000 or $60,000 just marketing to one customer. So if we have a big customer who's got big services potential, we'll contact, and we're now doing videotapes, discs, things that'll tell the customer all about our technology. So if you're a high-level VP, you'll get a disc from Xerox, you can plug it into a VCR, tell you all about our services opportunities, and it'll be customized for that person at that company as we're trying to sell to them. So as an example, if we see an RFP for a big services opportunity, we had one at Deutsche Bank in Germany. We did an advertising campaign at Deutsche Bank to fight and win that RFP. So they started an RFP. We went and spent money, did individual advertising in that account, and went after that particular account on a one-to-one basis. So one of the things we're going to do is we're going to do more single account marketing efforts than we ever did in the past. And that's very different. A lot of companies are not into that type of thing, but I think it's very effective. Yeah.
You said that you're very forward-thinking and you're always asking, about the next thing. And you talked a little bit about blogging. Can you let me know how Xerox is doing blogging right now and how effective that's been for you?
Yeah, we just started it. I mean, we've been doing that probably for about the last 6 months. We're working with a company called Text 100. I don't know if you're familiar with them. But we're doing work on blogging, and we're seeing it become effective. I think that it's in the infancy phase, in terms of large companies. And, you know, many people are anti-blogging because people can go in and do blogging against you and give you some awfully bad press, and you can't stop it. The issue is, my view is, you're better off taking a lead role and being offensive in the blogging field than letting other people come at you the other way, and you may get some negative things anyway. It's like, you know, when I was president of North America, I had a policy. I never looked at our web boards because I was in a process of laying off all these people and going through that. If I looked at the web boards every day, it would have been a miserable day. So some days you just got to say to yourself, I've got to just work through all this and go through it. But I do think it's going to be a key source of opportunity for people blogging. And I do believe that being proactive at it is better than waiting and letting other people do it, you know, adversarially. And I think it's going to be a big deal as we move forward. Okay? Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That concludes part one of our series of podcasts from the New Jersey Communications Advertising and Marketing Association Spring Conference. We'll have parts two and three up on the web simultaneously, and you can listen to each or all of them. Before we go, though, we'd like to ask you to participate in our listener survey. We're now testing some audience tracking technology from a service called podtrack.com. And as part of that experiment, we'd like to learn more about our listeners, so we'd really like you to take part in the survey for the podcast. How you do that is you look for the click-through button for the survey in the sidebar of the podcast blog. That's at lubetkinsotherblog.blogspot.com. Or if it's easier for you, you can just visit www.lubetkin.net, our homepage. And in the right-hand column of the homepage, you'll find a survey icon with text hyperlinks for surveys for each of our podcast programs. And you're certainly invited to visit all of those or any of those to complete the survey for the different podcasts that we produce. Now, if you have comments or suggestions about the podcasts, please send them to us. We'd love to use them in a future podcast. The email address is steve@lubetkin.net. We'd certainly also like to use audio comments in a future podcast, so please feel free to send us an MP3 file with your comments. We produce these programs in our studios in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. This is Steve Lubetkin. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.
This podcast is a proud member of the New Jersey Podcasters Association.
Hey, you got a problem with that?